So for those of you who haven't been aware of what is going on globally right now, there is a great organization that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks called the International Justice Mission. And they're really doing justice all over the globe in some tremendous ways. And today, the 24th, September 24th, is Global International Justice Mission, like awareness. And so churches all over the world, really right now this morning, are taking some time out of whatever they were doing to really talk about the work that is happening globally through this justice organization. And we are privileged to have a friend of ours who's been tracking with us for several years now, Ben Alston, who grew up as a missionary in Africa, and he'll talk a little bit about that, is now currently running a missions organization himself, and he brought up this opportunity for us, and we thought he'd be best fit to come share it. But to say this, the content, it can be mature and intense, but most of our kids are away. But if you're someone who may be sensitive to the kind of the subject matter we'll be dealing with, you can feel free to step out or, you know, go in the lobby or whatever, drink coffee. Some intense but important information for us this morning. So if you would, this morning we're going to just take this whole Sunday really to get our hearts, minds, and prayers around what's going on globally. So if you would, welcome our friend Ben Alston.
Wow. Get clap for and everything. That's awesome. All right. First of all, I just want to thank Brian and the elders for giving me the opportunity to talk about this with you all. It's something that's really been dear to my heart and my family's heart for a couple years. So I'm just really, really thankful for the opportunity. If you would just stand with me, I'm just going to pray real quick, and then we'll get started. God, we know that you are in control and that your heart is one of compassion, of mercy and love and justice. I pray as we go over some of this material today that you would press on us where we need to be pressed on, especially around the area of doing social justice of whatever that might look for us. I pray for those here that have really sensitive hearts and they want to help everybody, that you would guide them in the sense of not overextending themselves and knowing what they're doing, where they are, is important. And I just pray that you would lead us here. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. As Brian mentioned, I grew up in West Africa. I was there from 3 until 14. The country I was in is called Togo, and Togo has, at the time, the annual salary was about $300. So, you know, you're talking about a dollar a day, and I just grew up around that type of poverty, which made it sort of normal, especially in the sense that a lot of them seemed very happy, and life seemed to be going well. But as time went on, my passion to help individuals in that area continued to grow, and later on, I started an organization called 5810. We serve orphans and vulnerable children in Kenya. One of the things that came out of all that when I'd be going around Kenya or Togo is I'd see just the massive amount of poverty and wonder, like, how do you fix this? You know, how do you move towards helping in the best way? And we'll talk a little bit about that, but you might have thought, and I would have thought, you know, I probably would pitch my organization to the elders and be like, we should talk about this because we need a lot of help too. But I thought IJM made a lot of sense for Emmaus, and really I put basically two reasons. First of all, I do think that IJM, or International Justice Mission, as far as a parachurch organization goes, is the most effective parachurch organization, I believe, right now in the world. At least I'll make that case. I think the heart of the people here in Emmaus aligns with the mission of IJM. So again, I just thought this would be really good for us to go over with today. Before we talk a little bit about that, though, we do want to settle and just talk about a little bit of framework, little groundwork to talk about why do we care about injustice? Why is that even important? Last week, Brian talked about how God rescued us. And because he rescued us, we go and we rescue others in Jesus' name. He said, we're ambassadors. Whether you want to be or not, you are an ambassador of God. And you are to go out and be ministers of the gospel of reconciliation. And he said that we both had the ministry of reconciliation and the message of reconciliation, the doing and the speaking. And really, this reconciliation extends throughout life, whatever the situation might be. It might be marriage relationships. It might be family relationships, work relationships. Maybe it's a reconciliation of your heart towards a thing that God cares about. Whatever that might be, God is reconciling everything back to himself. He's making everything new. It's part of his heart. And it most certainly includes reconciling injustice and bringing about justice. Now, most of us, not all of us, but most of us grew up in pretty safe environments. And sometimes our sense of what justice and injustice is a little bit skewed. In 1991, we were back on furlough from Togo, and the Atlanta Braves went from the worst team in MLB to one of the best. And I was a diehard Braves fan. I think I probably watched 140 of the 162 regular season games. I mean, I love them. And they got through the national championship into our national league into the finals against the Twins, the World Series. Who calls it the finals? The World Series against the Twins. And Ron Gant, one of our best players, got onto first base, and there was this evil first baseman for the Twins named Kent Herbeck. And he lifted Ron Gant's leg right off the bag, and the umpire calls him out. And I just remember being, as a kid, I mean, devastated. I think I probably cried. My dad had to talk through some issues with me. It didn't seem right, but that's really not the injustice we're talking about today. It might be traffic for you. You know, that person cuts you off on I-40 and it's irritating. One of the angriest I've ever seen my wife is when we just had Jack and a driver was being a bit aggressive and I thought she was going to kill the person. That's not, again, the biblical injustice that we're talking about. We're going to look at Ecclesiastes 4:1. And really, this is the biblical picture of injustice. This is a picture of someone who has taking from someone who has not. Someone who has power, who is then taking from someone who doesn't have power. Ecclesiastes 4:1 says, "Again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter." Gary Haugen, the founder of IJM, says, "Injustice occurs when power is misused to take from others what God has given them, namely, their life, dignity, liberty, or the fruits of their love and labor." And we see stories of like this throughout the Bible. I mean, the most prominent is the children of Israel being oppressed by the Egyptians who had power. Think of David and Bathsheba. He sins, then has Uriah killed, and Nathan comes and says there was this person who had one lamb that he loved, and this other owner had hundreds of lambs, and he went and took the one lamb, and David is irate because this is injustice, someone with power taking from someone who doesn't, and we know how that story went for King David. And really, if you were to say, well, where would you talk about justice in the Bible? I have a little bit of a confession to make to a group of coffee lovers at Emmaus. I found that I really don't like coffee that much. I mean, I know, Eric's got his pour overs, you got your Kenyan. I've tried them, they're okay, but what I do love, what I love is milk with some espresso in it. I mean, love it. So you give me a latte, I mean, I'm going to brew or Jabala or something all the time. I love it. But you just give me regular coffee, I'm not such a huge fan. But once you pour that espresso into the milk or other way around, I don't know what the difference is, once it's all mixed together, you can't separate it. And that's kind of how justice is in the Bible. You can't really have the Bible, you can't have the gospel of Jesus without justice. I'm just going to show you a little bit. I'm going to read and just listen to the word of God here. Isaiah 61, "For I hate the Lord." If I hate the Lord, oh man, this is a bad church. "For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and wrongdoing." Zechariah 7, "This is what the Lord Almighty said. Administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another." Isaiah 42, speaking of Jesus, says, "Behold my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations." Luke 4, "The spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of the sight of the blind and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord." Proverbs 21, "When justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to the evildoers." Amos 5, "But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like never-failing stream." Psalm 33, "The Lord loves righteousness and justice." Psalm 10, "The Lord, he hears the desire of the afflicted. to encourage them and listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed, so that mere earthly mortals will never again strike terror. Micah 6, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God. Matthew 23, Jesus says, woe to you teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. Isaiah 1, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the cause of the widow. And then God describes himself in Psalm 68 as a father to the fatherless, a defender of the widow. This is how God describes himself. I describe myself, I'm Ben Alston, I'm a father, I am a husband, and I'm a salesperson for a software company. That's what I'd probably tell you. And God says, I'm God, I'm a rescuer, I am a father to the fatherless, a defender of the widow, I am one who cares about justice. We see this throughout the Bible. We're going to bring up another slide here. Two Hebrew words that are found throughout the Bible. We've got mishpat and tzedekah. We'll talk about the first one, and I'm just going to quote from a book written by Tim Keller. It says, this word, it occurs in its various forms more than 200 times in the Hebrew Old Testament. Its most basic meaning is to treat people equitably. It means acquitting or punishing every person on the merits of the case, regardless of race or social status. Anyone who does the same wrong should be given the same penalty. It means giving people their rights. This is rectifying justice, and it's why we all need Jesus, because we are all guilty, and someone had to step in and take that. Tzedekah is more the idea of righteousness. And just what I have up there, it just says life of right relationship primarily with God, but it also includes with society. I was reading a book by John Stott in the Beatitudes, and Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. John Stott says there's legal righteousness, there's moral righteousness, which we often think about with righteousness, but there's also social righteousness. So in the next slide, we're going to just look at a quick quote from John Stott. He says, for biblical righteousness is more than a private and personal affair. It includes social righteousness as well. And social righteousness, as we learn from the law and prophets, so again, he's pointing back to it, it's throughout the scripture, is concerned with seeking man's liberation from oppression, together with the promotion of civil rights, justice in the law courts, integrity in business dealings, and honor in home and family affairs. So where does this put us as followers of Jesus? I think this is the discipleship part for me and for all of us, is whether we do anything with International Justice Mission, and as I mentioned, I think many of you are already doing social justice in your own arenas, and that's awesome. What we are called to do is definitely to serve, to love, to fight for, and to pour ourselves out for the marginalized. That is unequivocal. That is what we're called to do. It is part of the mission that we're to do. When I was reading through this and studying for it, this quote came up again, and I'll do one more quote from Tim Keller on his book, Generous Justice, and this one just really hit me. Thinking about how am I using my life, my resources. It says, not giving generously then is not stinginess, but unrighteousness, a violation of God's law. In the book of Job, we see Job call every failure to help the poor a sin, offensive to God's splendor, and deserving of judgment and punishment. Remarkably, Job is asserting that it would be a sin against God to think of his goods and belongings to himself alone. Not to share his bread and his assets with the poor would be unrighteousness, a sin against God, and therefore, by definition, a violation of God's justice. I often think of if I give extra, like that's bonus points. And that's not. Like not sharing my goods and what I have is not bonus points. It's unrighteousness. So that's what God has for us for sure. This next part, we're going to talk about International Justice Mission. Freedom for the poor and the oppressed, and why I think it's such a great organization and could really fit in with what Emmaus is doing. So when we talk about the oppressed, it's been called the quadrant of the vulnerable. The Bible talks about the widow, the orphan, the immigrant, and the poor. So when the Bible's talking about it, it's often in those areas. We might add single moms in today's society. So again, I started an organization called 5810. We serve vulnerable children. And when people help out our organization, they really are changing that child's life. There's other great organizations, Compassion, World Vision, organizations I think some of you are involved in, Hear the Cry. These organizations are great, but one of the interesting things about them is we don't really serve the root cause. We don't serve to change that. We are changing the symptoms. A child that's in need. A mother who doesn't have money, so she needs money to start a business. And those things are all really important. But there is a foundational issue across the world, and that is injustice, where people cannot get justice for themselves. I'd really encourage you to check out and Google IJM TED Talk. You'll hear a more compelling even story than this from TED. The TED Talks is from Gary Haugen. And it's on how we are missing a whole area of how to help alleviate poverty. And he tells a story of a woman that he met in Zambia named Venus. And he wanted just to understand how poverty worked and for her. And what she said was, I didn't have any problems until my husband died. And my next door neighbor, Brutus, came over and violently took my land and kicked me out. That led to me holding my youngest son in my arms and watching him die. Because I couldn't feed him. I had land, didn't have anybody to protect me. Griselda is a Guatemalan teenager. She had her education paid for because that's a life changer. But she stopped going because she got raped in broad daylight by a group of men. She represents poor women across the world between the ages of 15 and 44 that are abused at outrageous rates. This group of women account for more cases of death, disability. If you were to look at that, how many of them suffer from that is more than those who suffer from malaria, car accidents, and war combined. In Bolivia, a pedophile has a better chance of slipping in the shower and dying than going to prison for his crime. In South Asia, a perpetrator has a greater chance of being struck by lightning than going to jail for that crime. So poverty is not necessarily a problem with money and materialism, as we might think. But if we bring up this next slide by Brian Stevenson, he's the founder of Equal Justice Initiative. He says, the opposite of poverty is not wealth. The opposite of poverty is justice. So when Gary Haugen heard this, he says, well, we got to get some laws in these places, Bolivia, Guatemala, India. He says, the problem is that that's not the issue. He says, for me as a lawyer, of course, my first reaction was to think, well, of course, we just got to change all the laws. We've got to make all this violence against the poor illegal. But then I found out it already is illegal. The problem is not that the poor don't get laws, it's that they don't get law enforcement. In the developing world, basic law enforcement systems are so broken that recently the UN issued a report that found that most poor people live outside the protection of the law. So today is Freedom Sunday, and we're going to focus on a specific group of people that are outside the law, and that is slaves. There is a lot of slavery today, even though we sometimes think of it as being something from the past. And just two questions to think of to yourself. Do you think slavery has gotten better or worse in the last 400 years? And what number would you estimate as the number of slaves that are in the world? So just think about that, maybe try to come up with your number. I would have missed it. There are approximately, if you bring up the next slide, 45 million slaves right now, today in the world. 1 in 4 of these are children. Human trafficking generates approximately $150 billion per year, 2/3 of which is related with sexual trafficking. Just to give you an idea of $150 billion, that is $20 billion more than what Amazon made last year. And this is in poor, poor countries. So it's something that people are trying to get one way or the other. In India, a child goes missing every 8 minutes. Nearly half of them are never found. In sex trafficking, those people that are being exploited are somewhere between 5 and 11 million. And lastly, 4 billion people are outside the protection of the law. So we talk about like stories like Venus, who had her son Peter die. This is prominent right now in Uganda, where widows get their land taken. Still having problems in Guatemala and Bolivia. When I was a missionary kid in Togo, we took a vacation over to the neighboring country, Ghana. There's a lake there called Lake Volta. Lake Volta is the largest man-made lake in the world. What I did not find out until about 2 years ago is on that man-made lake, there are approximately 10,000 boys that are in slavery between the ages of 5 and 17. One-fifth of those children are under the age of 6. And most of them are under the age of 12. I thought about Oba Overstreet out there working 18-hour days. They get little food, little sleep. They're treated brutally. When they get older, they typically take women from the area, young women, and hand them off for sexual rewards to the boys so they'll stick around, and then further victimizing the women in the area. In 2015, when I first heard about this, there was a boy named, well, we don't know what his name is. My wife and I called him Dennis. He's approximately 5 years old in that picture. I don't know if he's been released yet, which means right now he's fishing, probably hungry, in Ghana. In the Philippines, a 12-year-old girl named Cassie was befriended by a man who told her about his desire to help her with her education so she could pursue her dreams. The man who had promised to provide an education and a new life was actually running a cyber sex trafficking operation from his home. For nearly 5 years, Cassie was abused and raped for an online audience, completely hidden from the outside world. And that has just been taking off as the developing world's getting fast internet. Most of the customers are in North America and Europe. In Cambodia, Lena was a young girl who went to go live with her grandmother. She used to play with her grandmother, but she was then sold for sex. Her grandmother owned a noodle shop and was also a brothel. She was cashing in on the alarming trend in the mid-2000s in Cambodia, trafficking youth for sex, with some of their victims as young as 6 years old. Pedophiles knew they could get away with it, and the brothel owners could just pay the local police, and they would typically never bother them. 1 in 4 of the 45 million slaves in the world are actually found in India. We're going to watch a short video about a boy named Kumar.
You're working 14, 18-hour days with very little sleep, no freedom. Dignity is taken away from them, and that's something nobody should have to endure. We had, a number of years ago, two of the wanted laborers escaped from a facility. And they were tracked down by the owners of the facility and brought back. And as a punishment for what they had done, their hands were chopped off.
We would go to the government officers and we'd say, sir, there is a bonded labor case. And almost always the response was, there is no bonded labor in my area. What are you talking?
How much? 30?
Yeah, I'm free.
Ruchira, can you, there's a girl who's very afraid. Almost unable to walk.
This is Kumar. He was abandoned by his mother, and his father was suddenly killed. Orphaned and alone, he was accountable for his parents' debts. And at just 7 years old, he was forced into slavery. Kumar remembers a day where he was so ill he couldn't get out of bed. Immediately, his owner came looking for him. Kumar was trapped by debt and a slave owner who beat him continuously. He, like so many, had no remaining hope for a way out.
So this is the reality of what's going on in the world today. 45 million souls like Cassie and Kumar there. Women in Uganda are having their homes taken from them. Children being exploited online. And we just ask, why is it like this? First of all, this is how sinful we are as a human race, and this is why we need Jesus. Secondly, there's a massive just problem in the systems, in the justice systems. And you have to understand these slave owners, they're relentless, calculated, and tenacious. They're unafraid to use their power, money, and influence to oppress other people. So they are fighting hard to oppress people. And there has to be pushback from the other side. And first of all, I want to say there's hope because God's in control. We talked, saying about miracles. Whether we do anything here or not today, I am fully convinced that God's got these people and he's going to rescue them. And he's going to set everything right. But secondly, I'm very thankful that there is an organization called IJM. And I want to talk just a little bit about what it is and what they do. So first of all, IJM is basically a Christian law firm. It's the best way of thinking of it. They are a Christian law firm, and their goal is to end slavery in our lifetime. It's not like my kid's lifetime, in our lifetime. And they really go about this in four main ways. As you saw, they're also the largest anti-slave firm in the world. But they rescue, restore, restrain, and repair. So they have to have all these components to make things work and to really change the system. So they are going in and they're actually rescuing boys like Kumar. They are then restoring them through gospel-based restoration programs. They're restraining, they're keeping and actually protecting and putting laws in place that keep these slave owners from doing it more often or putting them behind bars. And then they're repairing systems that just have broken justice systems. They work with the local leaders there to make a difference. So we're just going to take a couple look at what have they currently done. So just a couple of things. First of all, with protection. Today, they're actually helping to protect more than 21 million people from violence because of programs that they've put in place. They're rescuing thousands. They actually rescued two girls from cyber sex trafficking yesterday, I believe it was, or 2 days ago. They're convicting. They've actually had over 1,200 convictions against slave owners and rapists. And they're training the local departments on how to spot these individuals and then how to bring them to justice. They work all across the world. They work in about 20 communities. And we'll look at this map right here, just give you an idea. These are some of the most prominent places they work. You'll notice Ghana, where the boys are on the lake. Kenya, they have horrible police brutality there, as well as sex trafficking. Uganda is where they're taking from the widows. In India, it's mainly around slavery of people who are working in horrible conditions, and they're not being paid. They're just held in bondage. In Cambodia, again, issues with pedophilia. In Thailand, is both bonded labor and sex trafficking. One of the amazing things about IJM is it really is attacking the root. So I'm just going to walk through another video. This is the second half of the Kumar video, and we're going to see what it looks like when IJM goes in and they rescue someone.
IJM discovered the horrific conditions in the brick factory where Kumar and others were being forced to work against their will. And, based on their undercover video evidence, local government authorities and police came alongside IJM to conduct a rescue operation.
The more and more we are doing these rescues, people are getting aware that people are being abused. There is bonded labor, there is trafficking. Also, the law is going to take its course as well as perpetrators go behind.
When the team arrived in the morning and entered the brick factory, 15 men, women, and children were rescued and given their freedom back. Then, they were each given a certificate to prove that they no longer owe any debts to their former owner. and one was for Kumar. After being rescued, IJM placed Kumar in their aftercare program to heal.
You'd ask him a question anytime, no matter what, and he would say, the one thing I want to do, sir, is I want to study. He was clear about that.
And then they enrolled him in school for the first time. Today, he is studying to be a social worker, to help those still suffering like he did.
And what we do at IJM is we go look for that lost sheep, that girl that's being abused, that widow who's been run out of her home. And we will search for her until we find her. That's how our Father has loved us. That's how we are called to love others. Not to search for them until we've satisfied ourselves. Not to search for them until it gets really hard. But to go after them until we find them. To be relentless in our love.
Just like Kumar's rescue, there's been a lot of other stories like this. I'm going to pull up a picture here in just a second. This is a rescue on Lake Volta. See the young boys there? This is Gideon. Gideon was rescued and restored. He's doing well in school. He wants to be a professional soccer player, which probably isn't in the cards, but he has hope, right? The story of Lena, we talked about her earlier. She was rescued years ago. She's helping other girls who have been abused and hurt. And I think the thing that's so exciting is as heavy as this is that there's hope to end slavery. And I just want to talk a little bit about what IJM has done so far. And really, I think there's hope to end slavery in our lifetime. In the Philippines, in one of the largest cities, IJM did a project to combat sex trafficking in minors. After 5 years of comprehensively working with all stakeholders in the public justice system, independent auditors confirmed a 79% reduction in the number of minors in the sex industry. This is massive. The Filipino government then decided to scale the same strategy in several other major metropolitan areas. By the grace of God and his rescue, in the span of just a decade or two, we may see the near eradication of sex trafficking of minors in the Philippines. That's amazing. In Cambodia in 2005, they did a study and 30% of the prostitutes were under the age of 11. It is considered to be ground zero for pedophiles and sex tourists. In 14 years of collaboration between Cambodian leaders, police, courts, social services, and NGOs, the community has dramatically changed for the Cambodian children. In 2015, a prevalence study conducted by IJM found that the prevalence of young minors in the largest commercial sex markets in the country, once estimated to be as high as 30%, has been virtually eradicated to less than 0.1%. Walmart can't figure out what to do with slaves, so they just gave IJM $2 million to open up a new office. That's how effective this organization is, and it's being led by the church. Have any of you read the book by Malcolm Gladwell called The Tipping Point? Anyone in here? A couple? Okay. The idea of the tipping point is that when there's these big shifts and changes, there's usually just this small linchpin that changes things. He uses the story of crime reduction in New York City, and they did all the studies, and what really changed it, or the linchpin that finally broke the camel's back, so to speak, was they got rid of graffiti in the subway and crime just drastically dropped. Malcolm Gladwell in his book says, look at the world around you. It may seem like an immovable, implacable place. It is not. With the slightest push in just the right place, it can be tipped. And Emmaus, I want to be part of that just in the right place at the right time with IJM and pushing the end of slavery. And I think that that's something that we can do. I've been sort of, I don't know, haunted, but this passage from Proverbs just has always stuck with me ever since I found out about IJM. In Proverbs 24, it says, "Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, 'But we knew nothing about this,' does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who guards your life know it? Will he not repay everyone according to what they've done?" I know that when I stand before God and when I maybe talk to my grandchildren years from now and they said, "There was 45 million slaves back when you were in your 30s, I want to talk about how I was part of the solution. So what does that look like for Emmaus? I again just want to say, some of you I know are doing so much with social justice, and we're humans, we're not God. Some of you already have things that you're doing, and that's great, and I don't want there to be a sense of manipulation because these videos are unbelievable and the stats are struggling. But one of the things that we can do is there's really four areas. We can give, we can pray, we can advocate, and we can collaborate. So in the area of giving, I'll talk about it in just a moment, but we will have times together as a church where we're going to be hosting prayer nights. We can advocate. I've actually been down to Representative Price's office to talk to him about bills that the United States are doing to push this and how they can put pressure on other countries. They're doing a big event in D.C. in a month. So if you're like, "I'm going to go to D.C. and do this," you can advocate. Maybe you don't have the money to do that right now. And then again, collaborate. We're going to do some book studies talking about justice in the heart of God. The thing that Freedom Sunday is about specifically for IJM and what they are really looking for is Freedom Partners. And Freedom Partners are really the backbone of their financial support. And Freedom Partners is really getting more of them is what's holding them back from opening more and more offices. They have the model. They know what to do. And so if you're interested in doing that, you can go to ijm.org/FP. We have envelopes out in the lobby if you want to do it that way. And one of the things that this starts off, it starts at $24 a month. For some of us, $24 a month, like, that's just not going to happen. I would encourage you to maybe get creative. Will your roommate do 12 and you can do 12? Maybe you got two roommates, 8, 8, 8. That's like two lattes, unless you get a pour over. I don't know. There's someone who gave $500,000, so anybody that signs up, well, it will double that. But I told somebody that I was speaking at Emmaus, and they said, "Well, I'll do three times for people at Emmaus." So basically at Emmaus, if you give $288 this year, which is $24 a month, that's going to be $864 that this organization is going to get. They did put a limit on it, but if we got 25 people, that would be unbelievable. But that's where we're at if you want to respond and you feel led in that way. What we're going to do here is we're going to show one last video of hope and rescue. We are then just going to have the band come up and we'll pray. So let's show this video and then we'll respond.
It's really hard. It's like I was thinking I want to die because of this pain, but I can't. When first time Mary Cooter telling me that Manila is very nice, he said, so I can wear a nice clothes, and then he's taking care of me. He told me that he can help me to reach all my dreams. First time in Manila, it was very happy because there's a lot of buildings, you wear nice clothes, you have your own money, you can stay in a nice house. So Manila is very nice compared to my place. We are six victims inside of the house of my recruiter. My recruiter hurt me every day when I do something bad that he don't like, because he want every day, I need to follow him, but if I don't follow him, he's going to hurt me, just punk me, slap me in the face in front of the people. really want to kill him. I really want to die that time, but I can't. It feel very lonely for me because I was very far from my family and I can't tell them what happened to me because I was very scared. When they rescued us, it made me heal all the pain. It is in my second home, I realize everything that you don't need to lose hope. If I see or if I hear or there is a victim of human trafficking like us, I just want her to comfort her, help her to move forward and just fight for your rights. Because that's the start where I stand now.
Cassie is alive and well. She was in Washington, D.C. in April, spoke to a group of about 5,000 people, and is urging people to come to rescue others like her. The worship team wants to come on up. Again, if you do want to give, the other thing I didn't mention is that matching does end, I think, at the end of the day tomorrow. And again, it's ijm.org/FP for Freedom Partner. You can do that on your phone if you want. I know for me, when I hear this information, it's just really, really heavy. And one of the things that I think is so important is that we worship God and we remember that He's in control. Because I think for me, sometimes there seeps in that doubt that why is He letting this happen? But we remember that He's good. He rescued us. He's rescued Cassie. He's rescued Kumar. He's going to rescue thousands and thousands, and actually, I believe, 45 million plus more. What we're going to do is just have the worship band sing part of a song, and then we're going to stop, and we're going to pray for some specific prayer requests.